to the sixth case of the United States versus Rivera. Mr. Goodman.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. Counsel. For the record, my name is Leonard Goodman. I represent Christian Omar Rivera in this appeal. And this is an appeal from a denial of a motion to suppress following a warrantless search and seizure. In Florida versus Royer, the Supreme Court stated that the scope of a Terry stop must be strictly tied to and justified by the circumstances which rendered its initiation permissible. Here, we have a situation where the agents observed circumstances which at best were the very low end of suspiciousness to justify a Terry stop, yet their response was resembled an arrest and a full-blown search, both of which would have required probable cause.
You saw him handing over cash, saw the car driving around the parking lot?
Yes.
A closed and empty parking lot?
At the time the agents pulled the defendants out of the SUV at gunpoint and conducted the search, they had the following information. They had observed a car enter a parking lot of a closed store. They observed the driver drive slowly through the parking lot and look around. They observed the car exit that lot and enter another lot behind the store, park next to an SUV. They observed the passenger of the car exit the car, get into the SUV, and then eventually they observed an exchange of bundles of cash.
Right.
That was it. They also observed that the fellow with the cash attempted to hide it when armed agents stormed the car. These observations could suggest a drug deal, certainly. They could also suggest
buying jewelry.
Well, they could suggest I would suggest the repayment of a debt. It certainly
payment
could.
Of a debt?
Repayment of a debt.
Oh, in a parking lot?
I would say that it certainly, this court has talked about excluding, looking at innocent explanations, and I think it's certainly plausible that Mr. Allen could have called Mr. Rivera and said, I've got your money, meet me in the Kmart parking lot. Mr. Allen is driving around looking for Mr. Rivera, finds him, and pays back
money.
How much
to do it the next time in church? You'll never get caught.
But I appreciate Your Honor's skepticism, but I would suggest that we don't need to make that finding for Your Honor to reverse this case. In fact, even if you find that these facts are suspicious enough to warrant a Terry stop, and even if you find that the mere presence of cash in a vehicle causes enough safety concerns for officers that it's permissible for them to draw their guns, pull the suspect out of the car, and even conduct a limited search, even if you make all these findings, there is still no legal basis to justify the search of a closed compartment in the rear hatch of an SUV. Michigan versus Long is the case that applies the Terry stop rule to vehicles. And in that case teaches that where an officer possesses a reasonable belief that the suspect is dangerous and, quote, may gain immediate control, unquote, of a weapon, the officer may search, quote, the passenger compartment of an automobile limited to those areas in which a weapon may be placed or hidden. And in a footnote, the Supreme Court makes extremely clear that, quote, the sole justification, unquote, for such a search is, quote, the protection of police officers and others nearby. And I would submit that here the search of a closed compartment in a rear hatch of an SUV cannot be labeled a search for the protection of the officers. There is no way that you can say that is a necessary search to protect those officers.
Mr. Goodman, what does the record tell us about how closed this, quote, rear department, you know, SUVs and station wagons are susceptible to, you know, to the second seat being down. And when they say closed, does the record tell us what we're talking? I mean, do we really have something similar to the trunk of a sedan? Because otherwise we're talking about boxes as opposed to somewhat more compartmentalized situations than other vehicles?
All we know is that the searchers accessed this through the rear hatch of the SUV, and then it was a closed compartment. We don't know any more than that. But presumably, anyone in the passenger compartment would have had to have climbed over the front seat, over the back seat, into the rear compartment.
Well, that's why I asked whether the record shows anything about whether those back seats are up or down. You know, when the back of the second seat folds down in a station wagon or a SUV, you basically have a kind of an enclosed pickup, so to speak, with I don't know how far you can reach it. I just wondered whether we have any sense of how open everything is post the front bench, so to speak.
We don't, and I agree that would be important information to have. It's not in the record. I guess I would submit that even if the back seat was down, it still was not an accessible reach to reach all the way back into the rear hatch of the compartment and open up a compartment to obtain a gun.
It's clear there is some sort of compartment, though. I mean, it isn't just an open space.
All we know is that the closed compartment, okay, accessible through the rear hatch of the SUV.
Can you push a button to open it in the front?
Not clear. It was unlocked. We know it was unlocked. I'm assuming that it was a standard compartment. There's no evidence that this was a trap car or anything like that.
No, that you have a button up in the front of the car that you can push the button, it'll open.
Oh, to open the rear hatch.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm sure that's correct.
And that they could to get anything that they wanted out of it.
So, Mr. Goodman, how far do you think they could go? What line would you draw here? You said they had enough suspicion to pull up or not.
Well, I'm suggesting that the reasonable suspicion is very low, and I have made the argument that it wasn't even enough for a Terry stop, but I agree that that's not my strongest argument. I think that even if I concede that,
right,
that there was enough for a Terry stop, and even if we can, I don't believe that the mere presence of cash is enough to cause enough concern in officers.
How about amount or denomination? You know, are we into the area of the drug currency situation where presumptively if it's, you know...
Didn't you admit it was bundles of cash?
It was bundles of cash. That's what the agent described seeing. And the amount was, I believe, $9,500.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly the agent, you know, the agent was outside the car. He couldn't count it. But he claims that he observed bundles of cash. I think that this court can decide this case without even deciding whether agents are allowed to use that degree of force. I think that this court can decide by looking at Michigan versus Long that the rear hatch, a closed compartment in the rear hatch of an SUV, a search of that compartment is not an officer safety search. That is a search that would have required a warrant or at least probable cause.
What about the possibility of an individual being in the back there? Let's say, this is a pretty large SUV, I think.
Well, I don't believe the individual could have been in the compartment. I suppose they could have popped the...
I mean, just be in the back area, but,
perhaps that's correct.
I mean, I don't know from a safety standpoint. It looks like there are two, you know, but maybe there's diminutive or...
I think that...
vertically challenged individuals in the back with a gun.
I think that's fair, that they could have popped the rear of the SUV to make sure there's no one hiding back there. That wouldn't have justified opening up a closed compartment.
If they had, if their Terry stop turned into probable cause after they got the money, I imagine you don't concede that, but if it did, then anything that happened after that was okay.
I think that's correct, but I think it's highly doubtful that, I mean, I think a probable cause is enough information to get a warrant from a magistrate, and I don't think that if these agents went up to a magistrate and said, you know, we observed two men in an SUV exchange cash, and they tried to hide the cash when we approached with our guns drawn, we have no other information about them, we don't know who they are, we don't know where they came from, we don't know if they have any criminal background, we don't know... where they were earlier that day, all we know is this limited...
Now, we could argue about whether that's enough or not, but if it is enough, then we don't worry about a Terry stop.
I think that's right. I think that's right. If they had probable cause at that point, then they could have searched the trunk.
Thank you, Mr. Goodman. Mr. Chang.
May it please the court, my name is Edmund Chang, I represent the United States. Your Honor, viewed through the lens of the experienced narcotics agents here, and giving due deference to their experience and their training in, with surveilling drug deals in parking lots, there was probable cause to search this vehicle. What the agents knew at that, at the point that they were searching the vehicle, was that there was counter-surveillance of them while in this otherwise shuttered parking lot, this Kmart lot. The Cadillac Escalade then drives down to an even more secluded spot in a street that resembles an alley, essentially, as Judge Palmai described it. And the Escalade meets up with another car in this industrial building parking lot where there are no other pedestrians, no other cars, and it's 6:45 at night. This is the perfect place for a clandestine meeting. Agent Moran then approaches.
Well, it's daylight, though, right? We're talking June, Mr. Chang.
It is daylight, Your Honor.
It's 2 in the morning, so it's pretty bright.
I'm guessing. It is bright. It was bright enough, certainly, for the agents to surveil the meeting.
And to see not only the exchange, but that the cash was bundled.
Absolutely. I point out the time.
What was the distance of that observation? Were they aided by binoculars and stuff like that?
No, he was only 5 or 6 feet away at that point, Your Honor.
Let me understand this. The agent drove up so close, and they were only 5 or 6 feet away, and they still had this exchange to go on between the...
He drove up alongside.
So you got three parallel cars now? What's the alongside aspect of it?
The alongside is in this parking lot, the Pathfinder is already parked there. That's the defendant's
right.
car. The Escalade then parks behind it, so the front of the Escalade is now at the back of the Pathfinder.
So blocking, the Pathfinder couldn't move, right? So that adds some suspicion there?
Well, no, actually, Your Honor, the Pathfinder could pull forward.
Oh, could pull forward.
It could have pulled forward in the lot. Agent Moran then, to get a closer look, pulled alongside the Pathfinder, the lead car.
Right.
He jumped out of the car, he approaches the car, and from about 5 or 6 feet away, that's where he sees the passenger who had been in the Escalade hand the bundles of cash, which he described as hundreds of bills, and in fact were hundreds of bills, to the defendant. When Agent Moran then ordered the passenger out of the car, the defendant then tried to hide a plastic bag that he's holding under the car, which ultimately turned out to contain some additional part of the payment for the half kilo of cocaine. And all that viewed together, Your Honors, is probable cause. The defendant is trying to take each brick separately and can't see the house because they're just looking at individual bricks, but when viewed in totality, those circumstances establish probable cause. And as Judge Evans' questioning points out, once there is probable cause to search that a crime has been committed and that there's contraband in the car, the scope of the search is not tied to a protective search for weapons.
Wasn't there testimony, too, that they could have reached that back compartment from,
yes, Your Honor, that's a transcript.
Inside the car?
The pertinent parts of the suppression hearing are transcript pages 89 to 90, and that's where Agent Dillard, who actually found the cocaine, described how he could get to that compartment. The side compartment itself had just a small tab. It's just a manufacturer-installed, not a special trap. They could just open with no key or any other special instrument.
Like a glove compartment in the rear.
That's right, Judge, where one could put a jack or other emergency equipment. And Agent Dillard testified on page 90 of the suppression hearing transcript that he could climb over. He did not, but he could climb over the rear bench seat to get to this rear area of the Pathfinder. So when viewed in the rationale of Long, of course, is to protect officers. So if Your Honors were to find that there was no probable cause, the searching that side compartment was a reasonable measure given the circumstances that a drug deal had happened. Guns are a tool of the drug trade. That compartment could have contained the gun, and the defendant could have accessed that compartment without ever leaving the Pathfinder. And as Michigan versus Long points out, there's a special danger in these roadside encounters, because at the end of many Terry stops, including this one, the suspect is free to go, as was Mr. Rivera. So when he returns to his vehicle and he gets in that Pathfinder, he's once again outside. The agents are not able to fully view him. The danger is still present, and that's why anything that he can get to from the inside of the car is something that is an area where the agents should be allowed to search.
What is the time? Oh, great.
This doesn't have anything to do with the case, but they were there looking for some other drug deal, and this one just kind of happened to fall in their lap. Yep. What happened to the one they were there looking for? This is the record.
The record doesn't reflect it, Your Honor, and I'm sure I asked the agents at one point. I cannot remember the answer to that.
Probably he hasn't gotten there yet.
Mr. Chang, so that I understand at least the broad time frame here, the Pathfinder arrived at its location in this second area. Shortly thereafter, the Escalade comes up behind it.
Well, Your Honor, we don't know when the Pathfinder got there.
Okay, let's assume the Pathfinder's there all night.
Okay.
Or all day. And then, because that's, you're quite right, we don't know that. I recall that now. The Escalade arrives and positions itself immediately behind the Pathfinder.
That's right.
And the agents are where at this time?
There's Agent Moran.
Is following the Escalade?
Is following the Escalade.
The Escalade, obviously unaware of the following, or doesn't care, but pulls
yeah,
up.
That's right. Agent Moran was counting on it, not being.
Does the record reflect how long the Escalade is there before the passenger gets out and makes? I'm just wanting to see the sequence. I'm asking this because I can't quite grasp, since I'm assuming it's daylight, that these two vehicles involved in this exchange are about to make an exchange when in a totally otherwise unoccupied area, a third vehicle appears, and they go forward with the exchange, and because the exchange is witnessed by the third vehicle. So I'm just trying to get a sense, if the record tells us, of that dynamics, the time dynamics.
Well, Your Honor, I don't recall whether there's direct testimony as to how quickly how much time elapsed between the Escalade parking behind the Pathfinder and the passenger then getting out. But what the record does reflect is that Agent Moran didn't pull up until after the passenger and the Escalade got out of the Escalade and into the passenger side of the Pathfinder. Now, the element of surprise that Agent Moran was able to use here, I think was aided, although one can only ask the defendants this, by the fact that there was a Cadillac Escalade, which is an enormous SUV, blocking the approach, blocking the defendant's view, and the Mr. Allen, who was the passenger who was paying the defendant, blocked their view of Agent Moran being able to pull up. And then the testimony does reflect that once Agent Moran pulled up, then he got out and approached the car. So that I think that explains the element of surprise.
I see. So that the Escalade apparently never tried, the people in the Escalade never realized they were being followed, or if they did, they paid no attention. And then their focus on what was going to occur with the participants in the Pathfinder, paid no attention to this third vehicle, or at least momentarily, approaching and witnessing this exchange.
Right. I think the occupants of the Pathfinder, because they were blocked, and because Agent Moran then got out so quickly, did not have an opportunity to see him coming. And the driver of the Escalade, she actually testified at the suppression hearing, and she explained how she was completely surprised. We don't know if she had an ability to communicate with anyone in there, but she certainly didn't testify to that, and her reaction was, "Oh my God, it's the police." There are no further questions. I ask this court to affirm Judge Pallmeyer's decision.
Thank you, Jane. Judge Goodman.
I think I'd just stress the point that
I think that the probable cause argument is so weak in this case to suggest that the mere observation of an exchange of cash money in a vehicle in an empty parking lot is probable cause for a search, I think borders on frivolous. And I think that the fact that the government continues to press that argument suggests that it is aware that there's a serious problem with authorizing a search of a rear hatch of an SUV based on a Terry stop, because you know everyone drives these SUVs now, and it's basically saying that upon a Terry stop, you can search the entire vehicle because everything is technically accessible. If you climb over enough seats, you could get to a closed compartment in a rear hatch. I think that is a stretch of Michigan versus Long. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Goodman. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will stand in recess.